Everywhere you look, it's beautiful. More than the expected number of Nazis at Costco.
This is true.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 376 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined by Seth Miller and special guest Tiffany Funk, co-founder of Point Me, which is what we're going to be talking about today. Hi, Tiffany.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you guys?
We're doing all right. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's on the upswing. Yeah.
All things considered.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Upswing?
Yeah, I mean, it's on a swing.
Life is a pendulum.
Yes.
talking about my vodka consumption this evening, it's on the upswing.
Yes.
I'll give you that. I've actually had to switch to wine to slow down.
Gosh. So, Tiffany, I'm just going to move straight on past that.
Right. I'm personally very stuck on that. I'm like, I don't know if I could do wine after vodka. And so, like, I guess I'm too old.
Vodka after wine is worse.
Yeah, it's less the drunkenness in that case than just, like, the digestion. But more power to you, Seth.
Well, see, I have the vodka before dinner, and then the wine rolls through with the meal.
And then he has another vodka before bedtime, right?
Well, as one does.
Yes, as one does.
Aged rums, thank you.
It's not a heathen.
anyways.
Tiffany, so you're here to talk about Point.me.
That you are here to remind us of what we're here to talk about.
Yes, yeah, that's why they keep me around.
Yeah, Johan's worked this evening.
They don't pay me big bucks, but they keep me around. So give us just a quick overview of Point.me and what it is and what the vision is for it.
Yeah, so Point.me is our new travel tool. We're super excited about it, where we've taken all this experience that we have from over a decade of helping people book award travel by hand, and have built a discovery tool where you can put in your origin, your destination, and we go through a whole bunch of data sources and all of these routing rules and really esoteric things that no one really should need to know, and spit it out into something that's really digestible and can tell you, it doesn't matter what credit card you have or what program your points are in, like, here's your options. If you want to book this particular flight, here's the 18 different ways you can book it.
Wow. Okay. And I mean, that's incredible. I mean, when you think about how hard it is sometimes to look up reward flights in particular, it can be a real pain in the butt. So
it can be. And I appreciate you guys saying that it's incredible, because one of the things that Adam Morovitz, my co-founder, and I have talked about is when people ask us, well, I mean, lots of people know about miles and points, and lots of people know about technical stuff. Why has no one else done this? And we just start laughing. And it's because it's really hard.
I've tried a version of this before, right? Like, back in the day, KVS and Expert Flyer existed. I wrote a knockoff version of one of them and got into it. And they were award search tools of a sort. And Expert Flyer still exists, obviously. Right. But it's different now, right? This is sort of that plus.
Right. Well, in your tool, Seth, like, I remember using it for something. Was it the Cathay Pacific space specifically, where, like, nobody else but you was really accurately with that? There was, like, a window where, like, that yeah. was the only way to do it.
One of the sources worked, and I was like, sure, okay, people seem to like this.
Yeah, and so there's things like that where part of it is just we have so much context because we've been in it for so long, and it's like, well, this worked, and then it stopped, and then this worked, and then it stopped, and, this particular airline is – let's not blame the airline. This particular loyalty program's IT department is really bad at understanding what inventory actually looks like on one of their code share partners. So you have to discount it. You have to just say that it's not really there. Otherwise, somebody's mom is going to transfer points to a program to book a flight that doesn't even exist. And just all of those quirks and things that get folded in.
Yeah. And so when you say that, is your availability real time or near real time? Is it, like, what are we
talking
about?
It is real time at the time of the search. So when somebody presses the search button, we go through and we go through all of these data sources and do so much normalizing of data, which has been a new interesting thing to discover is, well, I'm like, I don't have a technical background, but I'm getting pretty dang technical, and just sort of things like, okay, wow, you'd think that, like, within a certain alliance, everybody would use the same number of significant figures for their flight number. to represent one single flight, and you'd be wrong. Like, that is not what happens. So you're adding zeros and you're subtracting zeros to make sure that we are in fact talking about the same flight. So yeah, we go through and we search. And so it takes a while. I mean, eventually it'll be faster. Just like if you guys remember using Google or DuckDuckGo in the early days of meta search, like it took a minute and now it's instant. So eventually point me will be faster too, but there's just a lot of data to come through with every single one of these searches.
Yeah. And just the idea of, I mean, because a lot of airlines have even cut off access in some cases, right? Where their loyalty programs have been cut off. So the idea
not to
that
me.
You're, what's that?
Not to me, like cut off access.
Just from external applications, right? Like that's happened in the past. American, I'm just looking at you, American.
Or Delta. I mean, we can share that.
Yeah. Line. Yeah. Those are all, yeah, we could get into that. But anyways, you were going to, I just thought that you knew something that I hadn't, and I'd have to be like, I'm sorry, I have to go stop podcasting because if an airline has turned off access, like I have a thing I need to go and take care of. So sorry.
No. I what I'm meaning is, you know, there's so much that you're having to collate right together. And in some cases that source of information isn't great. So when you do this, when you do a search and you grab all this data, can you then directly make the booking through PointMe? Or is it something where I now go and take that information and take it back to my airline of choice?
Yeah, so it's the latter. And it's actually something that we are so proud of. And it doesn't seem like an obvious thing to be proud of. Like, wait a second, why aren't you having in-app booking? But we are sending traffic and acquisition opportunities back to the loyalty programs early and often. So if you pick a flight and you say, like, there's one I was looking at earlier today, it was like New York, Madrid on Iberia booked using British Airways Avios. So we're telling somebody, hey, like you need to sign up for an Executive Club account. Here's where you go. And we have beautiful animated instructions to tell you, like, here's the exact page. And we send you on. So you don't have to try and navigate the Executive Club website, like go here, create your account. Do this search and do this. So programs like that, because it is easy acquisition for them. And then they have all the opportunities to market to the customer during checkout that they would normally have. So there's not a competition. And that's something that for a lot of these programs, you know, they make a lot of money getting people to buy a rental car or book a hotel or, you know, whatever else. So as opposed to some people, institutions who have said, we're going to be a one-stop shop. You're going to do everything in our app. Customers will never need to leave. Like that's actually not compelling to a loyalty program. They like that they're, you know, we're sending them to them.
Yeah. Yeah. And so people go and they book these flights. And I guess from my perspective, right, let's just take me as an example. I've got 2+ million Chase points. Okay. Is it something where I can just plug in, that's how many points I have, link it to my account or something like that and say, what do I do with these Chase points if I want to go to Singapore or something like that?
Well, if you know you want to go to Singapore, then yes. And, you know, we can go ahead. And right now we have it set up so you're searching specific dates. And again, this is based off of our experience working, like our collective experiences working side by side with people who are trying to use their miles and points for years and years and years and years and years. So while the ad geeks are like, I just want to fly on this plane any day, any destination, I don't care. That is not how the broader consumer market likes to search. So we're catering right now to everybody's moms. Yeah. So I want to go to this place from this other place within this date window. And right now it's searching one date at a time. Soon we look to expand to more dates at a time, but that's a lot of searches to do simultaneously. Yeah. So you could go ahead and put in like, I want to go to Singapore and on, you know, October 5th, and we would show you, here's all the flights that have award space. Or in some cases, we might even show you a flight that doesn't have award space if there's a really great revenue fare. We're linked in with Skyscanner, so we can show you revenue prices with Skyscanner or with certain other programs. We can show them to you directly depending on the airline and how that's integrated.
Oh, that's and nice. Then,
yeah, it's nice. So you can directly compare. Like there was one I was looking at today where it was an economy flight somewhere and it was a reasonable number of points. It was like 7,500 points, but it was also only $89. So it's like, you know, it's nice for people to see those visuals because people don't always think about it that way. They're just like, I just want to use my points. And they're like, oh, or actually $79 is a much better option in this case.
This is my mom, right? Asking me like, Stephen, do you have any Marriott points for me to use at $120 a night Courtyard? I'm like, no, I don't.
You're like, no, for that specific specific answer, no. But then, you know, the flip side of that.
Or it's, hi, mom, yes, your booking is confirmed, and you just pay the $120 to avoid the problem.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Or that.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's just easier. So, yeah. And then the flip side of that, again, on the mom front, is like, there was one we were looking at today, and that JFK Madrid flight was like 35,000 points for the one way, actually in business class. And, you know, for my mom, who would absolutely use 35,000 points to go from Phoenix to Orlando, you know, it's nice to be able to explore and be like, okay, wow, some of these prices are way less than I thought. There's a lot more that I can do here, a lot further I can go.
Yeah. And with the, I mean, COVID, you know, kind of this lull in COVID right now, I'm guessing you're seeing a lot of traffic or people so trying to book flights. Yeah.
Yeah, so much traffic.
They wouldn't let us record this when they launched because they got too busy.
Right. And it's one of those things, like, people tell me it's a good problem to have, but I mean,
still a problem.
The jury's out on that one. I'm learning a lot really quickly.
Yeah.
As far as that goes. So yeah, it's just lots of demand. But we already knew that that was happening. We have seen a lot of demand on the like concierge side of things all during COVID, because people just want to have that assurance of, if I book something, is there then someone else I can talk to when things go wrong? And it's just the mentality has shifted from if things go wrong to when things go wrong. And my friends who work in, you know, brick and mortar travel agencies say the same thing, that like they've been busier than ever because of COVID, not in terms of revenue, but in terms of conversation volume. And, you know, just people have questions and they just want to know that there's going to be someone else there when their flight changes or when the border restrictions are different or when they have to cancel something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think it's kind of like what I talked about with Singapore Airlines, right? Like, you know, you just need to make everything, Tiffany, go through email and like, you know, and oh, we'll get back to you in a week
later, even though the flight has already departed.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's a good business proposition.
No. Well, and it's hard too. And like we talked about that, like from a technical perspective and from a attention perspective, it would actually be much better to have you put in a search and then like, we'll email you when we're ready. Like even Autosplash does that, right? Like you're not having to engage with Autosplash while they contemplate whatever it is that they're doing. Like, I don't even know. So we talked about that, but you know, that's not how people like to book travel, and we want people to be able to explore. So as soon as we start getting results in at a certain confidence interval, because we're not always confident in everything, but once we have a certain confidence level that it is in fact not phantom space, it is something you can book, it is a legal routing, you'll start seeing those results. So things will still start coming in, and it can take, you know, a couple minutes sometimes, depending on, you know, what's going on for things to come in. But there's very quickly, there's stuff that you can click on and start looking at and being like, oh, I didn't even realize that this program was a partner with this operating carrier and that I could book that way. And you can click on it. You can see all the different booking instructions. You can see the transfer ratios from your credit card. And, you know, you can explore and discover rather than just waiting for us to send you an email.
Nice.
So it sounded very nice.
And I assume that it actually works that way. So
It does actually work that way.
So I've been reading through the website and looking at the pricing plan. And we should note, it is a paid product. It is not free, because I think there's a lot of good reasons for that. I won't poo-poo that at all. I've learned over the years making many free tools that it's a terrible business model.
Well, and also, can I just pounce on that a little bit? Part of the reason why we wanted to make it paid is we've gone back and forth on like, what do we want to do in this space? And we want it to be completely unambiguous who we work for in this case. And there is so much in our space. I'm obviously part of this being a thing where it is unclear how someone makes money. And that sets a certain tone. And we didn't want that with PointMe. We want it to be very clear, like, you're paying us. We're not sending commissions to whoever, like, you are paying us. And so we are giving you advice. And so when we have like our PointMe picks and we're making recommendations, like that is based off of, you are our customer. We work for you. It's not because some program paid us to show up, have them show up higher in the results or something.
Gotcha. But more specific question I had is, that is very useful. It is good insight. I really do appreciate that. Right. The honeymoon bundle, does that also always include the seaplane transfer in the Maldives, or is there more?
For you, sure, you know, but no, that's different. So, but here's the reason why we have that. And it's something that is like, it's not for you, it's not for me, but we get so many people, and have for the past decade, who come and say, I mean, heck, my neighbors across the street are in this situation. Okay, we're having a wedding. It's not going to be a potluck. We know that you know about the points. And we know that we're supposed to like get some credit cards and put them on things, and they want to go to the Maldives. So what do we do? And we have just learned that it is easier for to have a pathway where like, yes, like have your engagement party and then please call us, rather than, oh, our wedding's soon. And like, you know, my father-in-law already paid for 90% of it. Exactly. Everything's already paid for. They did a wire transfer and, you know, but we want to use some points. And then you find out that they have, the wrong points. It doesn't even matter. It's just the wrong points. Right. So it's just anything like that. We've realized that it's to everyone's benefit for us to be involved early in the process. And, you know, okay, between you guys and your parents, these are the 8 credit cards everybody needs to get. And then you have the correct points to go to the Maldives, as opposed to the entirely different batch of points you would need if you wanted to go to French Polynesia.
Sure. Yeah. No, it's just, it was funny to see that on the page. And well,
I mean, just wait, because we're going to have a whole landing page for it. We do a crazy amount of business with engagements and honeymoons and weddings.
Yeah. No, it's, I did my honeymoon that way. It was 17 years ago, 16 years ago now, but 16, I get that number right.
Right. There will be a quiz later. Will you at least
explain? Yeah, my wife knows better than to listen to me ramble here. She has to put up with that the rest of our life together. But still, yeah. I mean, I did absolutely. Our honeymoon was around the world tick at some points, and, you know, back when I paid way more attention to how that whole system worked. And
right. And a lot of people just, they don't want to pay that attention. They just know. Yeah. They see on Instagram, like, we know this is a possibility, but we don't want to.
Yeah,
listen, you don't want to pick up a new hobby. Planning a wedding is already enough of a hobby.
Yeah, it's the worst hobby ever. Unless outsource it to my mother and my sister.
It is truly the best thing about being married, and I think my husband would agree. Like, the best thing about being married is that you're not planning a wedding. Like, you're done.
I could get my own.
I'm on board. No, I do though. I think at the price points that you're looking at here, relative to the time and whatever invested to figure it all out directly, it's way cheaper. Way easier. So
it's like when the honeymooners, you know, decide they want to go to the Maldives, and you find out all their points are with Air Astana because they signed up for the wrong credit card.
right. Well, and there's just different things, you know. It used to be like, until a couple years ago when Capital One made their points transferable, inevitably everyone wanting to go on a honeymoon had these non-transferable points, and having to tell somebody like, okay, if you had any other currency, you could do this with 140,000 points, but you know, lucky customer, it's going to be 1.4 million.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And we literally built our business with Points Pros and also with Juicy Miles. Like, so both of the businesses got built off of, back before there were Capital One transferable points, before Thank You Points had airline partners, before Chase Ultimate Rewards even existed, people who would call American Express and get told it was going to be 1 million points to go, you know, to Rome to start their cruise. And then we'd come back and be like, okay, well, what about round trip for 80,000 points in business class? You know, like, you just, people didn't know that you could transfer your points at all.
Yeah. And so, okay, on that point, right, like we talked a little bit about, if I had, you know, 2 million Chase points, are you logged in? Like, can I log in with my Chase account? Like, can I link that to PointMe and have it kind of know how to transfer the points, or is that another deal?
Yes and no. So you can't link it directly to your bank yet. And depending on what the bank is, you know, there's different windows for how that may or will work. I think that's sufficiently vague that I won't get in trouble.
Nope, that's the end of it.
But we do have an ability to, where you can do a link with Award Wallet. It's just an OAuth. So all that we get from Award Wallet is just the number of points that you have in a program. We don't get expiration dates or the numbers or anything like that. So you can just say, sync to my Award Wallet, and then we can show you just flight results that match the programs you have points in.
Gotcha.
Or if you
can afford this sort of.
Yeah.
You can afford this filter.
Yeah. You could afford this filter. Exactly. Or you can put in just manually and tell us how many points you have. Obviously, there's a couple programs that Award Wallet can't support because of reasons.
Yep.
And then also, so sometimes it's like, okay, well, it's not really about how many points I have in my Award Wallet. It's, I want to look and do this because, you know, I have this many points here, and mom has this many points here, and my cousin has this many points here. And it's just easy for me to tell you that we have 80,000 United miles to work with, you know, so you can just put in a number and we can do that.
Sweet. Nice. Yeah. I mean, it sounds awesome. I'm like kind of going through the website as we talk, and I kind of love it. What's the pricing like for a person that wants to do this?
Listen, well, Seth is here on our pricing page, apparently, like, being like, you need to raise this. Like, these are very compelling. But we have it set up a couple of different ways.
Yeah. Yes, at a low price of $129 a year billed annually, Stephen.
Oh,
you too, and get unlimited searches.
Yeah, it's not bad at all.
Yeah. Or you can do like $12 a month for people who like monthly billing. And then we also have a starter pass. And it was really important for us to have this like pay as you go option. We're sensitive to the fact that some people are subscription adverse right now. And then again, if we're looking at the broader consumer market, not everybody has 2 million points. You know, they have just enough points for the one trip they want to book. And so we have a, like, you can pay $5 and just have access for the day type of situation for the people who are just booking that one trip. Or, you know, sometimes it's the kids in school where they have very fixed dates. So they know exactly when they're traveling. It's not like they're just going to be casually looking all the time to see when that amazing, you know, Singapore suite availability is there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Wow. Seth, what else you got? What?
No.
We're also like, while we're doing the podcast, we're also on camera. So I can see Seth's eyes going back and forth reading the website. And I'm just like waiting for the bug notes that I'm going to get after this.
No, I haven't bought the starter pass to find them yet. Don't worry. No, I honestly, at this point, I'm more impressed than anything else, because like I said, I have made various goes of this sort of thing in the past and know certainly not all, but many of the challenges to make it something functional, and seeing it actually work and come to life, even though it wasn't me getting to do it, I'm impressed.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot coming from you.
And you don't have to answer this, Tiffany, but like, I want to ask a question kind of off topic of pointing. That's a great way to preface the question, right? Do you have a favorite program, like personally for yourself?
Oh, that's difficult.
It's a loaded question. It was intentional. It's what we do in radio. It's shock value.
Shock value. Okay. So what do you mean by favorite program? Is it like, if I could only earn points in one currency ever again? Cause if that was the case, I'd stop playing the game. Or if it's just like where I would look first, if I didn't have point me to go to and see what all of my options were, like, where would I start looking?
Yeah. Where would you start? Like, what would be your like go-to airline program?
So in terms of redemptions and what they're doing now and the flexibility that they're offering to customers, I love the new Aeroplan program.
Yeah.
And part of that is just, it's the new shiny, right? It's the program that's been most recently updated and gone through, and they had a lot of time to work on it and sort of work on it in isolation.
Yeah.
Just with everything they're in with, you know, Amy and the whole back and forth of that. So it's a modern loyalty program that reflects a lot of what the modern consumer is looking for. And because of that, it's a go-to program. They've got some very fair redemptions, and I like the different possibilities that they enable in terms of using points and subsidizing different things, mixing cash on Air Canada metal. I think that's all great. You know, unfortunately, Air Canada doesn't fly to Spokane, and so that sort of cramps my style because it's two Q400s to get to an Air Canada flight in most cases. But I mean, I like a Q400. I'm not complaining.
No, it's okay. You can complain. I mean, I've spent way too much time on Q400s.
It's less the Q400s and more the locations of the Q400 gates. Like,
oh, yeah.
I mean, if you do a Q400 from Seattle to Vancouver, you basically walk from Seattle to Vancouver.
It's that. I mean, she's not lying.
No. Well, and then
you run to catch the connection, and they've already left, and the next one doesn't leave for another 9 hours or something.
Right, exactly.
Seth, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think that wraps up the conversation on Point Me. I was going to transition on to some other things, unless we missed anything, Tiffany.
I think that was fun. If I answered the questions that you guys had,
yeah.
I'm super excited about it. I love hearing that people who have a little bit of technical know-how are also excited about it. That warms my heart.
I mean, it's hard work that's paying off, Tiffany. I think
so much hard work.
Yes, it's knowing the technical behind the scenes stuff that goes on with this. Good job.
Thank you. Yeah, we are very proud. We're excited. There's obviously some bumps in the road, and the demand is fun. working through that, we're excited. Nice. I think it'll be great for people.
Sweet. Yeah. Well, if you want to stick around and talk about some other topics, we'd love to have you. And
absolutely, I'd love to.
Yeah. Hit it, Seth. What do you want to talk about?
Russia.
Oh gosh.
Shocking. No.
So the Russian airlines, right, are going like domestic only.
Yeah. As well, and Belarus. At this point is basically domestic.
It's basically domestic. It's like a nice suburb of Russia now. Yeah, or Belarus.
Minsk, Moscow light.
More Moscow heavy, depending.
Yeah.
It's But so right, this whole going domestic only thing is driven by a couple factors, obviously to Europe and then North America, no overflight rights. I was wrong about overflights in the United States. Obviously we recorded last week before, the administration here changed that rule. I still think I was right, but whatever. I still don't see the value.
Does that not sum up most of what, well, yes, you, but also like, I'd say a lot of these things about many administrations, it's like, oh, okay, yeah. well, that was your choice. It doesn't really, yeah. Okay. All right.
But whatever. What's interesting about is even the various routes to Africa, to the Middle East, into Asia that the Russian airlines were flying that weren't blocked off are now all gone. And that's largely tied to the fact that the leasing companies terminated all the leases because they can't get paid anymore. And the Russian airlines are like, yeah, that's cute. We're not giving you your planes back.
I sort of love it. I mean, obviously I hate it. Everything about this is awful.
They're literally stealing billions of dollars of airplanes, Tiffany. What about that is there to love?
Well, it's like the least of our concerns, right? Like genocide, yeah. Billions of dollars of misappropriated airplanes. Yeah. You know, there's spectrums and scales of bad here. But it's interesting because I don't understand why Europe let all these flights depart to begin with. Obviously things have escalated very quickly, but was there seriously nobody at any of these leasing agencies who could call their, member of parliament in Ireland and be like, hey, just FYI. Like, I don't really know what we do here, but like, that is my airplane. And if you let it leave, we'll never get our airplane back.
Yeah. So there's a couple interesting things that came up. I think today, Monday, we're recording this. It turns out that Russia paid off something like 50 737s. And through an Irish lessor, but it was through their bank, the Svad Bank or whatever, whatever the one that is with the S, that's the Russian bank. They're like, they have a branch of a business that's in Ireland that does leasing, that uses their branch in Switzerland for the financing, that's all controlled from Russia. Because, the money laundering is important and tax evasion as well. But literally the day of the invasion, they paid off all those leases so that they own the planes outright, which is good, I guess, for the airlines and for the lessor who was able to funnel some money out of Russia in hard currency at that point. Mm-hmm. But like, you still have the problem of if those planes, which are directly owned, try to fly to a foreign country, the lessor is going to put a lien on them the minute they touch down, or the airport is, because they haven't gotten paid for fuel and landing fees or. And like, they still can only operate domestically.
And what about insurance?
Or insurance, or most of those planes aren't actually registered in Russia. Because they're not Russian built. They're on a Bermuda or Cayman registry. There's a lot of interesting challenges like that. And then on top of that, we found out late last week that Boeing and Airbus and Embraer all committed to turning off support agreements. So they no longer, everything's digital now. So like, they cut off their access to the digital manuals and they won't let you sell spare parts. So, obviously, you could sort of cannibalize some of the fleet for a little while, but at some point, you're going to need the manuals to make sure you're doing a C check correctly. You're going to need to have spare parts to make sure this stuff happens.
Right. And as a co-owner of a 1998 Jeep Cherokee, I can say that we can keep that car running for about 2 weeks without YouTube.
So you're saying is that Aeroflot's going to turn to YouTube for MRO services. Is that what
I'm just saying? Like, if you turn off their manuals, how much do you trust your memory, or how do you get the guy who's like, oh yeah, I fixed this a couple weeks ago when I had the instructions.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting. And I think of it as the parallels to Iran, who with all the sanctions and everything else managed to keep a relatively ancient Boeing and Airbus fleet running. But those sanctions, I feel like, weren't as stiff, and it was prior generations of aircraft where maybe it was more possible to do that. I don't know.
You had a little bit more of a ramp up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what the impact of that is, but it just seems to me that, like, from conversations that I've had with other people, this seems to be hitting Russia pretty unexpectedly versus, it hasn't really been, in ways it has. Yeah. If you look at it from an international relations perspective, no one there is surprised, but it's not it like we've been stockpiling parts or getting ready or like printing out instructions or, doing any of the things that you might do if you know that you're having activities that are going to make you
It went
popular.
From zero to full level of sanctions very quickly.
Yes.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think the other fun one is some of the new routings we're seeing. Like, Finnair is still flying to Tokyo, and I think they added Shanghai back. They added one other city back. I forget which. But basically by flying to Anchorage and then onward. like over the top, but it, the 9.5 hour flight to Tokyo now takes about 14.
It's going to be this resurgence of the Anchorage airport, right? Back in the day when it used to be a very busy airport in the middle of the night because so many flights did have to stop there.
Yeah. What's interesting is Finnair is doing it by routing over Anchorage, but not actually stopping there. They're just using it basically as a waypoint because they can make this, the planes can make them nonstop.
The planes can make the nonstop now. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a, it's actually an interesting twist on it. It's still the routing point. if you look at, if you look at the path, it literally goes right over it, but it's, they don't have to gas and go. So, we'll see how long that lasts.
Didn't we see a JAL flight, fly, what was it? Haneda to London, via over Alaska and Canada.
Oh, I think I saw one of you post the flight path on that where it was just like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, this, this nice easy westbound route. Yeah. We're just going to go east. It's cool.
Why not? Why not?
I will say that, going back to the planes, one of them did get, impounded. The, a 777 flew for some reason. They tried to, they flew from somewhere in central slash eastern Russia across the Pacific and down the U.S. West Coast to Mexico City. Nordwind did. And then the plane got, impounded in Mexico and is now in Arizona. So
one
out of 150 something.
That's still like, that's a fair amount of coordination.
They got one. And apparently, there's a story on the Air Current. One, a lessor tried to grab one in Egypt and failed. So, chasing that down.
And didn't Boeing?
I have so many questions about that, though. Like, oh, like, we tried to. Like, it's an aircraft. It's not like a fast moving object. You're not swatting a mosquito or like trying to catch a cat. It's an entire airframe sitting on the tarmac.
Yeah, like, how could you not get your repo pilots on board fast enough?
Right, right. Like, I'm just curious as to what happened. I mean, granted, I mean, it's Egypt, so I
think that answers parts of the question.
Yeah, that answers parts of the questions in terms
of. There have
of
been
just
a lot of repatriation flights in and out of Egypt, or out of Egypt over the past week. So,
yeah, yeah. And so, okay, so that's part of it. But I'd be very curious.
Yeah.
And Seth, Boeing has said that they have enough titanium now, for their composite.
Yeah, so that was another issue, is that Boeing had a partnership with a Russian supplier for titanium, which is a huge part of the aircraft manufacturing process, even though, even with the composites and everything else, titanium is a critical piece. And so, yes, they've said that they have enough now for the foreseeable future. I don't know what the exact timeline was, but that they're okay having been cut off from that supplier, at least for now. So, here's hoping. Yeah, Russia was something like 50% of the aerospace titanium market supply, so that's awkward.
And
I don't think it's just because Boeing can't deliver 787s anymore. I think there's actually a different reason.
So how is Aeroflot actually selling tickets now? Because they've been cut off right from the GDSs.
They have. And so there's an interesting sort of delineation there, is the Sabre and Travelport and Amadeus, all the Western GDS platforms won't sell Aeroflot tickets. Also on Monday, ARC, which is Airline Reporting Corporation, I think is what the acronym stands for. And it's basically another industry group that handles inter-airline money transfers. Sort of like IATA does that. They have their payment systems. It's one of those systems. They actually cut Aeroflot off as well. But basically, I mean, cutting them off from the GDS limits sales through third-party systems for the most part, right? So that you know, if you shop with Expedia or whatever, that's where those generally use either a GDS link or a direct link if the airline provides that. Tiffany knows a lot about these APIs, nodding in the background a little
bit. So much more than I ever wanted to know about airline ticketing systems and APIs.
But the GDS is only those sort of third-party sales. If they're selling directly on their own website, they don't need that. If they're selling through Russia has its own sort of internal GDS platform that I would imagine most of the travel agents within Russia are using. It doesn't need that. And since even before they had to go domestic only, they were cut off of Europe and were mostly domestic only. I think most of the sales were happening there. There's been a push by many people, self-included, to wonder why Sabre hasn't cut them off from their PSS, the passenger service system, which is sort of the back office stuff that manages reservations and manages dispatch and manages the fleet. Mm-hmm. And depending on which modules the airline has purchased, can go to crew scheduling or departure control systems that help with the dispatch. So there's a lot of different parts of it that are in there. But those are the sorts of things that will, without that, it gets to being quite literally sort of paper and pencil in some areas and absurd Excel spreadsheets in others to try to keep an airline running, as opposed to, no, we've got this fancy computer system that still works. So there's some questions about that. I'm trying to remember now who I saw. There was one company that was, oh, was it Shell? Oil took delivery of a tanker of Russian oil the other day. And was like, yeah, we had to do this because if we didn't, we weren't going to have enough supply to keep the refinery online, and shutting the refinery down while waiting for the next tanker would actually cause more disruption and like really screw things up. And so we did it, but we're going to take all the profits from it and donate it to a Ukrainian relief fund. So there's some weird balancing acts that are going on right now.
But... And that's, all of that kind of stuff is sort of tricky too. You know, it's like, on the one hand, making things as unpleasant in Russia as possible is probably the fastest way out of this, unfortunately. And, you know, I think a lot of people have talked about that. So shutting down their domestic airline ease is one thing. On the other hand, it's like, well, who is trying to leave Russia right now? And should we be making that brain drain easier and facilitating that and, you know, letting, I don't know, it's very complicated.
Yeah. But and oh, by the way, there's still, you know, lots of people dying just across the border. So
right.
None of it's good.
No, none of it's good.
What else we got here? So Cape Town? More. What's that? Oh yeah, oh. United and Cape Town. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So 2 weeks ago, Delta applied for slots to fly from Atlanta to Cape Town, and I guess last summer they had announced they wanted to do it as a triangle route via Johannesburg and then to Cape Town and then home back to Atlanta. And a big part of that is because they got rid of their 777LRs, so the 350s couldn't really do a full load from Johannesburg all the way back to Atlanta because it's hot and high. So they were weight limited out of the airport in Johannesburg, but Cape Town didn't have those same limits, so it was going to work great. And then the South African government, at the behest of South African Airways, which is barely flying at all these days, was like, nope, we're not going to let you do that. And so Delta got screwed a little bit, came back 2 weeks ago and announced they're going to just fly three times a week on the 350 Atlanta to Cape Town. It's going to be great. And they put in their application to get those slots from the U.S. government. On Friday of last week, United Airlines was like, yo, that's cool. We think we're actually going to do it from Dulles instead of from Atlanta. And there's only four slots total available right now. And we want three of them. But you also want three of them. And that adds up to six. So there's kind of a problem. What do you think we should do? I know. How about we split them two and two? I think that'll be friendly, right? And literally United in its application said, we understand that this is like a problem for everybody. If Delta's interested, we'd be okay splitting it two and two. And the balls it takes to write that, it's kind of amazing.
But it's so common in these airline filings, especially when it comes to these competitive slots. Like the hubris is astounding and obviously so enjoyable when you don't have skin in the game.
Yeah. You know, United's comment was like, Delta's strategy makes no sense. It lacks foresight. They got rid of all their planes and then realized they couldn't actually operate the route. And that's why they've been scrambling to try to figure this all out. And you're like, I mean, I write that, but put it in DOT filing to make it a matter of federal record. That seems a little aggressive.
Or appropriately aggressive, depending, I guess, on how you look at it.
Yeah. I do feel like, for better or worse, the DOT filings have gotten to a level of like, the number of fucks given has dropped. It's not quite to zero yet, but like, I feel like they're letting the lawyers have a little more fun with these than they used to.
Yeah, it's a whole vibe now.
I enjoy it. So anyway, I don't know who's going to win those slots. That's I would lean towards Delta just because United already has a Cape Town nonstop plus its Newark flights to Johannesburg, and Delta has its Johannesburg flights, but not a Cape Town flight. And so the DOT tends to favor more competition like that, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. Well, we got on the bonus show coming up. We have some JetBlue news about bringing back some fresh food and liquor, and then WestJet's buying a Sunny carrier. So we'll talk about that. If you're a Patreon subscriber, you'll be able to hear it. I want to thank Tiffany Funk, co-founder of Point Me. And you can follow her on Twitter at TEBFunk. And that's actually on everything, right, Tiffany? It's like Twitter, Instagram, everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then Point Me Travel is at Point Me Travel on Twitter. And point.me is the website if you want to check it out. So thanks, Tiffany, again for joining us. And we was glad to have you. It was great.
Yeah, loved amazing. It. Thank you, guys. It was fun being here.
Yeah. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.